Science journalist Sonia Shah has a knack for uncovering trends before they become headlines. A few years ago, she wrote a book called Pandemic, and today we're living in one. She has a new book out called The Next Great Migration, in which she makes the case that we humans are, like many animals, a migratory species. And that challenges some of our deepest beliefs about what it means to call a place home.
Migration is inherently dangerous and difficult. So why do we do it if we aren't forced to do it? Or does it take being forced to do it to happen?
I don't think we know the answers to that question. But what I try to expose in the book is that there must be huge benefits because we know the costs, as you mentioned, are huge. I mean, we're living through some of the costs of movement right now with this pandemic. And yet what we're discovering is that there's so much movement going on right now in the present among wild species and humans, but also in the past. If you look at specific migrations, this idea that it's only propelled by catastrophe doesn't really hold up. People migrated into the remote islands of the Pacific in prehistoric times, you know, just set off from Asia in canoes, not knowing where those specks of land might be that they would land on. For a long time, there was this idea that, oh, that must have happened by mistake because surely no one would purposely do that. But it turns out that, yes, we did it purposely, and we didn't do it purposely just once. We did it multiple times over and over and over again. People migrated into the Tibetan Plateau in the highest reaches of the Himalayan mountains where there's not even enough oxygen to breathe. So these are all clues, I think, that point us towards the answer to the question you're asking.
Your last book was called Pandemic, and I wanted to talk about that for a little bit. How are pandemics and migration related?
Well, roughly speaking, contagions generally are a function of animals, peoples, and microbes moving around in different ways and colliding in different ways. You know, if you look at Ebola, for example, as a virus of bats, it spills over into humans. That happens in some forest area in West Africa, and then people carry that into cities. And, you know, so we have the movement of the bats relating to the movement of the microbes, and then the people move it around. And contagion is one of the effects of our mobile planet.
What about the idea that we belong in a place, that a place is our home? Is that concept changing, or is it changed forever?
I think there's a tension there because I think we want to belong to certain places, but at the same time, we also need to reckon with the fact that we are very mobile and we've moved a lot over the course of our history. What we now know is that people moved out of Africa, of course, but then didn't stay put once they got to certain places. So there's this idea of like dispersal out of Africa into an uninhabited planet, and then people got to Europe and the Americas and Asia, and then they just kind of stayed there for millennia until the modern moment of migration through like fast ships and planes and all of that. But what scientists are piecing together from genetics of ancient DNA is that people moved into the Americas and then moved back into Europe and back to Africa. People went into Asia and then went to Europe and then back to Asia and then back to Africa. And it was this complicated movements were happening just like they are today, but they were happening in the deep past. And so this idea of like, where do you belong, quote unquote, is really kind of it's an artifact of a time when we didn't think of ourselves. We didn't understand ourselves as a migratory species, a species that moves a lot.
And some of that, too, strikes me as it can be racist and xenophobic. The idea of we belong to one place, you don't belong to that place, the us and them.
You know, I trace it back to Carl Linnaeus, who was sort of the father of modern taxonomy, and he decided where everything belonged. He named the living world and thousands of species. He came up with a system for naming them. And he decided that, okay, people in Africa belong in Africa. People in Europe belong in Europe. People in Asia belong in Asia. And people in the Americas belong in Americas to such an extent that he said they were biologically isolated from each other and biologically alien to each other, that people who lived on different continents were different subspecies of humans. And in fact, people from Africa, he said, were almost subhuman, that they were not fully Homo sapiens, but the hybrid product of Homo sapiens and this other species of humanoids called troglodytes. And we see that idea of people of African descent as subhuman to this day with the killing of George Floyd. I mean, that was the first thing I thought of. When you look at that, the man's face as he has his knee on this other person's neck, and he has this nonchalant expression and his hands are in his pockets. And, you know, it's very much like he doesn't think that person under his knee is fully human. And that is a very old idea. And we see it, it's still so alive in our politics to this day.
How can we move on from that? What can we do?
I think part of the understanding ourselves as having a shared humanity means that we're going to have to recover our lost history of migration and the ways we are all connected. So the white nationalists, for example, they have this thing where they chug milk. That's like a big sort of white supremacy thing. And they get together and they chug milk. And it's supposed to indicate that they're Europeans, and only Europeans are able to digest milk because they have a special gene that allows them to do that. But what they forget is that same gene exists in nomadic people from parts of Africa, from parts of the Middle East, camel herders. There's a number of different peoples who also have that gene. The fact is, those differences are fuzzy. They're nebulous. We do all have this shared ancestry because we have moved around. So those connections that migrants create, you know, I think that's what we need to recover. It's part of overcoming this old idea that we are naturally split into continental races that are color-coded by each continent. The black people in Africa, the white people in Europe, the yellow people in Asia, the red people in the Americas. This is what Linnaeus said, and it still is so deeply ingrained in how we think today. But science has moved on since Linnaeus, and we know that we have more in common across those boundaries of race than within them, because we've all moved around so much. Whenever people move into a new place, they mix with the people who are there. We meld very easily. So the genes in migrants' bodies spread into the host populations that they enter, and that's a process that works and that is ubiquitous.
Sonia Shah is a science journalist and author of The Next Great Migration: The Beauty and Terror of Life on the Move. She spoke with Shannon Henry Kleiber. We began this hour talking about migration as a natural wonder, something that's going on all the time, right under our noses. And we talked about wayfinding as an ability, a skill that can be learned and passed down from one generation to the next. We're all navigating unfamiliar territory these days. And so we can choose to focus on what's scary, or we can try to think of this as what humans and animals have been doing for a very long time. Moving, adapting, finding our way. To the Best of Our Knowledge is produced in Madison, Wisconsin at Wisconsin Public Radio by Shannon Henry Kleiber, Charles Monroe Kane, Angelo Bautista, and Mark Rickers. Our technical director is Joe Hartke. Our executive producer is Steve Paulson, and I'm Anne Strange Champs. Thanks for joining our journey today.